Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
Joining me in center ring today, we have Denise Kavalaskis. Denise is a transformational love coach. Now, what's a transformational love coach, you might ask yourself? Well, first of all, she helps you in the area of love and relationships. And she specifically works with women who are currently in and or exiting toxic, narcissistic relationships. And she comes from a place of knowing, because that's where she started on her journey to be the transformational love coach that she is. So by way of giving you a little bit more information, first of all, thank you for joining us, Denise.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and talk to you about this.
Oh, and I'm excited to present this too. I love what you do, and I love your story. I love how you approach things.
Thanks.
So Denise built her coaching business around her own story of divorce, where so many coaches start from. Mm-hmm. She was married for over 20 years in a very toxic relationship. Let's go back to 2011. Denise finally had the courage to plan and leave her former husband, leave the only state, Florida, that she had ever lived in, and leave her son and her entire family too, but she extended family. Mm-hmm. But she took her daughter. So I want to stop right there.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about why and how, what it was like to leave your son. How old was your son? Why did you take your daughter, not both your kids? I know this had to be a very thoughtful and tough decision.
Yes. So they were a little bit older. My son was 16 at the time. My daughter was 17, just graduated high school. And my son and I had the discussion. Obviously, he was old enough to make his own decision. So do you want to come with me in your sister, or do you want to stay here? And initially he said, I want to stay here, but I want to go live with grandpa, who lived in the Tampa area of Florida, away from his dad, because as your listeners are about to find out, their dad is mentally ill, had lots of stuff going on. So that was the initial plan. But then it changed over time, because what narcissists do is they're master manipulators, and my ex, manipulated our son to stay with him. And so that's where that decision came from. So then he ended up staying with his dad.
Did anything traumatic or long lasting happen to him? Did he have to have counseling because of the last couple of years, I guess, with dad?
Yes. So thankfully, nothing happened after we left. Nothing major happened after we left. Everything major and traumatic and dramatic happened before we left. So it was one of the pieces to my story, is the catalyst that I had the courage to finally leave. So yes, it happened before we left, not after.
Okay. And how was it for your daughter not having her brother around?
Well, her brother is a carbon copy of her dad, so...
Oh, no. Oh, gosh. So it was a little bit of a relief, maybe?
It was, yes. It was a little bit of... You know, of course, we missed him, but it was a little bit of a relief, because when we moved here to North Carolina, there was a sense of peace and calm within ourselves, because our surroundings were now peaceful and calm versus the total chaos and trauma and drama that we, all four of us, had experienced before that. So they're now, it's been 10 years, Judith, and they're now, just now starting to have that close relationship again after all of this time.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That it is happening.
Yeah, it is.
That's really great.
Yeah.
Just to pause for a second, and because I really want to go on, there's so much here I love that I want to share with you, for you, with our audience. But in regards to a narcissist, give me a sentence or two that describes a narcissist, or at least describes what it was like with your former husband.
Well, the relationship is always one-sided, right? It's his needs, and I'm going to use my as an example. It's always his needs, what he wants, what he thinks is true, what he thinks should happen. I had no voice in the relationship, and my place in the relationship was basically to serve him. Whatever I did was to benefit him. So to be a stay-at-home mom, to run his business, whatever it was for him. So, you know, one of the biggest things that I share with people to really recognize what a narcissist is A, like extreme selfishness. That's a big clue. Conversation hoarders, the blame game, blaming everybody and everything for their life didn't turn out this way or whatever. So there's a lot of red flags there to detect. And again, I didn't see this for 22 years. So yeah, if I was to describe the relationship, it's very one-sided. And whatever you do in the other part of the relationship benefits the other person.
Okay, that was good. That was really good. With that, because we have a narcissist in our family, a nice narcissist, actually, because they can be nice. They don't have to always be the worst versions of a person, but we call it the bait and switch. So everybody will be set up to do something at a certain time, and then at the last minute, somehow that person is in control and changes things. Mm-hmm. Changes dinner time, changes the restaurant, changes everything. And you just don't feel like you're on any kind of equal footing ever. Is that how it felt for you?
Very much so, yes. Yeah, they're very controlling. So the two biggest ways that people can tell if this person is toxic, so we'll leave out all the labels and the diagnosis, it's just to know that this person is toxic, is the manipulation and the control. So the scenario that you just gave was controlling, right? Bait and switch. Now everything's under my time, the way I want it to be, who's going to, you know, all of that, very controlling.
And I'm going to give a little sidebar example with advice. It in a relationship, you don't even have to be married to the person, but you're connected to them somehow, family, friend, something. And there was a situation where there were dinner plans on a holiday, and we got the last seating in the middle of the day. We got the last seating, and if you're 15 minutes late, we're giving it away because we have a waiting list. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Friends came over at the appointed time. Everybody's ready to leave. The narcissistic human was going to be driving. And at the appointed time, when we're standing out in the driveway, ready for the car to come out of the garage, the car came out with the driver in shorts, ready to wash the car. And so we said, well, wait a minute, we have to leave now because we'll just get to the restaurant on time. We have to leave now. And no, this will just be 15, 20 minutes. And then you have to get dressed. No, we're not going to get seated. So here's what we're going to do. This is me saying it. I mean, years ago, the eternal amicable person, I try and be as level as possible when I can, and then I have my moments. I have my moments, of course, yes. Like we all do. I said, look, no worries. If you want to clean the car, go ahead and do that. We're going to take my car. We'll meet you there. We'll hold your chair. Just come as soon as you can, and then, you know, you'll have dinner. Mm-hmm. And the expression on the face was, and the words, are you kidding? You're going to leave without me? Well, unfortunately, we have to, or we won't get the seating, but we absolutely want you to join us. We looked forward to it. So come as soon as you can. Now, here's what that did. That there was no argument, no blame. Mm-hmm. Everybody assumed their own level of control. Mm-hmm. You want to clean your car? Fine. Not arguing with you out of it. Clean your car. But we have lunch, dinner plans, and we want those. And we're happy to have you join us late. Never did join us. But in terms of everybody listening, when you have these situations come up, don't argue, right, Denise? There's no point in arguing. Mm-hmm. You can keep a level head and have your boundaries.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. Have your boundaries ready and just say, no, go do what you need to do. I have a million examples like this in the family, but that one suffices. No, do what you need to do. It's fine. Understand. Mm-hmm. Please understand that with the drive time and the restrictions, we got to go.
Right.
And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And how did you extract yourself on that day when you and your daughter, and we're going to read more in a second, left Florida for North Carolina? What was that last conversation or day or week like?
Interesting. So our daughter graduated in May, and I had already left. I was already staying at my friend's house with plans to have the Penske truck, pick it up, pack, yada, 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 and come here to North Carolina. And when I saw him that day at her graduation, he came dressed to the nines, you know, smelling good, looking good. And the thing about these types of relationship, there's a strong sexual attraction. And I was still very sexually attracted to him. So when I saw him that night, even though I was leaving and nothing was going to change my mind, I was attracted to him sexually. And so the graduation went on. We dropped off our kids. We went back. We had one last night together, right? One night of passion together. And, you know, I remember writing a letter the next day, writing in the letter saying, how can we be so in sync with each other in this way, but so separate in all the other ways, right? So even though we had this night of passion and he went his way the next day and I still left, it didn't change my mind. Not a thought came into my mind of, oh, maybe we could get back together. Maybe we could work this out, because by this time it was 22 years. And by this time I had realized like there's just no going back. So that was the last night. Sex.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
Nobody's ever said this before.
Well, you know what? No one's ever asked me that, Judith. So thank you. That's the first time that I'm sharing this. So thank you for asking that, because I've never been asked that. And there you go.
Well, I've never asked a question like that of anybody yet. But it just struck me as we were talking that you were at a graduation, you were living at somebody else's house, so the plans were in motion. Mm-hmm. But nobody else who deals in coaching, in any level of coaching, and certainly deals with personality disorders and specifically narcissism, has ever talked about the sexual side of that relationship. And love bombing is a big thing when you first meet a narcissist.
Yes.
Isn't this a key point for everybody to remember?
Absolutely.
The love bombing, as if this was meant to be.
Yes. Yeah. I always describe love bombing as too much too soon. That's the easiest way for me to describe it. It's too much too soon. And like you just said, it's meant to be. It's perfect. You're the perfect one. I've heard when I was dating, I heard, oh, our hands, you know, holding our hands are meant, they just fit so well together. I like you too much already. I mean, you name it, and it's, you know, but in a nutshell, it's too much too soon. One of the dating stories I have, he wanted me to say, I love you way too early. And my mind and my body and my soul was like, I couldn't even say the words. They wouldn't come out because I didn't love him. I didn't even know him. And I thought, this is weird. Like, why do we have to rush to love? You know, we're in our 40s. Like, why does it have to be love? At that time, I didn't know what love bombing was, even though it had happened to me several times. But yeah, to put it in a nutshell, it's too much too soon. It's a let's move in together after a very short amount of time, or here's an engagement ring way too soon, or like I was just saying, I love you. Let's exchange I love yous too soon. You know, just, mm-hmm. Yeah, examples like that.
Yes. And until you've gone through a relationship like that, you won't know. You'll just, you'll feel overwhelmed a little bit. Kind of nice. I mean, don't we all want the fairy tale? Who doesn't want a fairy tale?
Right.
But then you find out in reality, fairy tales, you have to build them.
Yes.
You have to work at fairy tales, don't you?
Yes. And what commonly happens, narcissistic people, they know, energetically, they know who to choose. They have a type, right? And it's not a type like blonde hair, blue eyes. It's a type energetically. And these women, although they're successful and beautiful and smart, a lot of them have been craving this kind of attention their entire life. Maybe they have abandonment issues. Maybe mom and dad split up at a young age, or maybe one of the parents passed away. Whatever the scenario is, there, and like you said, we all want the fairy tale, right? But there's this energy from the woman of, this is it. He's saying everything that I've always wanted to hear from a man. And a lot of times the man looks good on paper, I say, like the resume, right? He has the nice career, looks, or whatever. But there's behind the scenes, the energy is not there. And they feel that, but they ignore that. They ignore their intuition. They ignore their gut because he looks good on paper. And he's saying everything that I've ever wanted a man to say to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this because they listen. They're good listeners in the beginning because they're taking those words that she's saying, what do you want? Or even if it's on a dating profile, and they're taking that and they're using it.
Giving it back to you, giving it back to you, meeting you where you are.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, this next part is really important that I'm going to read because there's the element of trust now is important when you're making your move to leave the relationship. So I'm going to go on. So Denise and her daughter left Florida with only a futon couch and an air mattress.
Mm-hmm.
Denise had no job in Florida when she left, meaning no stockpile of money, no company to transfer to in another state.
Mm-hmm.
She left but manifested $10,000. I guess manifested, this is what you needed.
Mm-hmm.
And had no job lined up in North Carolina, but did the move anyway. Here's the important sentence. That was very important what I just read, but she trusted herself for the first time in her life. And she was choosing herself for the first time in her life. So you trusted yourself and you chose yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like getting to that point?
It was amazing because I was so, these relationships are very codependent. And I was very codependent on him financially. He was the one who, you know, I ran the business. I did the books and the calls and yada, yada, yada inside. And he went and ran the calls. It was a service business. So, and our entire relationship, I was very dependent on him financially. So it was amazing because actually before I actually left him, there was an opportunity that my daughter came to me and said, Mom, let's fly out to Colorado and we're going to help our friends in Colorado move because they're moving from Colorado to Florida. So we'll fly out to Colorado, a state that I had never been in, and then we'll drive back from Colorado to South Florida, which to me sounded pretty cool because I've never driven through all those states. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. But mine went right to, oh gosh, but we can't do that, Denise, because we have to save money because we're leaving. And this, if we leave out of town and buy a plane ticket and spend money over there, then that's less money that we would have to move to North Carolina. And then the second voice came in my head, and that was, wait a minute, your entire life you've made an excuse to not do what you want to do because of the marriage or the kids or the this and the that. And now here's an opportunity where you can go, and now you're making an excuse because of money. And that's when I said, screw it, I'm going. The money will show up somehow, some way. Booked the plane tickets, and we went. 10 days in Colorado. It was amazing.
Wow. and everything worked out. So this thing about trusting yourself,
yeah,
And what was the other thing? Trust. She trusted herself for the first time, and you chose yourself. That was
yes, making myself a priority. Right. Which is extremely important, because in these relationships, what the other person is doing is she's constantly giving away. She's giving away her energy. She does too much. She loves too much. She gives too much to not only the relationship, but she's doing it for everybody else around her. So she's never really making herself a priority. And that's important. And the same goes for men. This is the same scenario for men. There's men out there who attract women who are in the same personality, right? And the men do the same thing. They're givers, they're loving, they just want to make her happy. So they're again, the same energy. They're constantly giving, and they put themselves on the back burner. And so it's the same dynamics. It's just genders.
You know, I'm really happy that you said that, because there's a gentleman named Bill Eddy, Eddy.
I know Bill Eddy.
Okay, that's right. And so, you know, he has some statistics in his book. He deals with personality disorders, and he tries to help people who are married to people with personality disorders, how to communicate with them, how to be around them, so that you keep it as even as possible and keep control over your own life if you still want to be in the relationship. Mm-hmm. He also counsels how to get out of the relationship. Mm-hmm. But he did some statistics, and even though we kind of talk about men being narcissists, it's almost equally weighted. There's maybe like 5 or 7% more men who are narcissists than women, but we don't talk about women being narcissists.
Yeah. Yeah. The numbers are almost even the last time I checked the statistics, which is ironic, because a narcissist they will not admit that there's something wrong. So I'm curious, how do they get diagnosed? Which is one question that I have. But yeah, the last time I looked at the numbers, they were very close in being even.
Do you think men have as difficult a time exiting the relationship as women do, or not as difficult because they actually have money, they typically work? Is that a true statement, do you think?
Yeah, well, it is just as complicated, because if they are the moneymaker and she's the one who's the narcissist, well, it's the same thing. She's going to bleed him dry. She's going to take him for everything. So he could have a lot of money, but he's not going to have a lot of money because she's going to take it. And especially if there's children involved, yeah, she's going to try to get as much as she can.
Well, I have a question, regarding trusting yourself and choosing yourself. Mm-hmm. The question is, in your opinion, do people who marry narcissists distrust themselves and feel inferior?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So know yourself,
you know,
before you enter these relationships, because they are everywhere. It's tough to have a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Okay, so moving on here. Denise was born and raised in South Florida. She has personally experienced divorce, both as a young child and through the end of her own marriage. So do you think, Denise, the experience that you had with divorce as a child led you to marry your former husband?
Well, the divorce as a young child was more of my mom kicking my dad out. And I remember him coming to our family home and knocking on the door like he was a stranger. And I don't remember how old I was, but I just remember feeling heartbroken for him and for us, right? Because it's weird that dad's knocking on the door to like ask permission to come into his own home. And there was some, you know, abandonment stuff going on there and heartbreak, because no child wants their family broken up. Even in the worst situations, no child wants to see mom and dad break up. So, but I do know for a fact that the reason why one of the reasons why I married my ex-husband was because he resembled energetically a part of my mom and dad. He resembled the part of my mom and dad that I was not willing to accept that I come from, and I wasn't willing to accept or to see it for what it was, right? So a lot of people, they're like, oh, that, you know, narcissistic, or that person pisses me off. I don't like, oh, I can't stand that person, right? This is a key right there to know, like, why does that piss you off or hurt you? And kind of go deep into that, which always ties back to childhood. And then when we look at mom and dad and we are like, oh, I don't like that my mom acted this way, or I don't like dad did X, Y, and Z. Well, when we resist it, it persists. And the persisting is later on in life, we attract it into our relationships, into our life. So that's why.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Now the moving on part. Leaving him, leaving the only state you ever lived in, simply starting all over again, physically, mentally, emotionally. You said, and I quote, "It was and still is the best decision I ever made, but everything in the past came with a cost." What do you mean by that?
Well, the repeated patterns. Right? My children are still healing from the traumas and the dramas that they went through. Right? And we love our kids so much and we want the best for them. But when they get to adulthood, there's only so much that we can help them with. Right? So it's that, it's the repeated patterns. Coming here to North Carolina, initially I started dating right away. I also was numbing myself with alcohol and men. So there's that story of going out on dates, and it's really like, I just remember not even caring about myself, not even caring about my body, having unprotected sex, and thinking to myself, well, when I was married, when I was in a committed relationship, my ex gave me STDs 3 times. So why do I care if I'm having unprotected sex now, right? If the person, my thought process then was, if the person that loved me did this to me, then why would I even, you know? So there was very low self-esteem, very low self-love, very low confidence within myself and self-respect for myself, because our body is our temple. And I was just really rebelling bad in that time. So all of those things combined is what I meant by the cost.
Thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing that, by the way. That was huge what you just said.
Thank you.
Really, really, really huge. So thank you, because this subject, divorce, relationships, it's such tough stuff that as we share with each other, it's so very helpful just to know we're not the only ones.
Exactly. Yes.
And you apparently turned yourself around big time. So let's talk about that a second. So now you went through all of that. How did you get out of that pattern and move forward to the person you are today with the work that you do today?
Well, it came to the patterns happening in the dating, my dating stories, and the same pattern, the same type of man was showing up in a different body, right? Same type of energy as my ex. And it came to this one point where I was dating this one person, not that long. I was in Colorado on vacation with my friends, and it was the first time that I noticed he was being very needy. And I kept telling him, like, because there's a 2-hour difference too. I kept telling him, like, you know, I don't mind texting or having short conversations, but I'm here with my friends and I'm doing things and I can't sit on the phone, because narcissists, they want all your attention.
You're right.
All.
Yes, keep going. You're right. I finally got that. I just sat up and said, oh my gosh, that she's right.
Yes. they want your attention. When they don't get your attention, then they throw a fit, or they yell, or they create some story. So this happened to be, it got to the point where I was like, look, this isn't working. Let's just take a break. This is what I told him while I was in Colorado. Well, that threw him over the edge. And I get back from Colorado. I'm back at my job. I did medical sales. So hospitals were my account. So I did a lot of walking. So I had some freedom in that position. So I get an email from his sister stating that he was found on the side of the road and that he had OD'd. And it was almost the same scenario as the one that I experienced with my ex-husband in Florida, the father of my children. Well, that was a big wake-up call for me to see, Denise, you've retracted now almost a carbon copy of the same scenario in a different state with a different person 5 or 6 years later. And that's when I was like, okay, these people don't know each other, but they know me. I'm the common denominator here. I have to see what's going on here and why I keep attracting that over and over and over again. So that's when I got off all the dating sites, took a step back from dating, and I focused for 18 months, Judith, on me. And that's when I hired my empowerment coach. That's when I delved deep into what's going on here and discovered so much about myself and discovered I was an abused woman in an abusive relationship. That's when I discovered my ex is a narcissist. I had endured 22 years of narcissistic abuse and all of the things that went along with that. So that's how that happened.
You never even used that word or knew that concept when you decided to leave Florida, leave your marriage.
Right.
You just knew this was untenable.
I knew it was effed up. That's the term I use.
A much better way of saying it.
Effed up. This is effed up. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. And you said an empowerment coach?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, until I met you, and I've talked to a lot of coaches, I don't believe I've heard empowerment coach. Could you describe a little bit about what that is? Because you are also a certified empowerment coach, too.
Well, basically, it's just empowering some, you know, man or woman from I meet them where they're at and keep helping shifting their energy. Because here's the thing about all of this. It feels like it's really heavy and it's complicated, but it's actually not. And I tell women this because I mainly coach women. I do have a few male clients, but it's the same for both. They come to me and they say, something's wrong with me. Something's broken. I feel broken. I feel damaged. And I tell them, I said, none of that. I know that's what it feels like, but none of that is actually true. What's happening is you just need to shift your energy. You need to shift your energy. So I describe it and what I learned and the technique that I share with my clients is these women, and this is who I was too, are mother energy. And mother energy is she loves too much, she gives too much, she does too much, which is a dream for a narcissist, right? Because one's a giver, one's a taker. So they're a match made in hell. So I meet them where they're at in the mother energy and I help them rise up into the woman energy. And when if you were to describe woman energy in a nutshell, she's got her shit together in all areas of her life. That's what woman energy is. So she's got her finances in order, her relationships in order. She's got, you know, she has self-esteem. She's not on the lower levels where I described myself before, where I had low self-esteem, low self-respect. She's on the higher spectrum of those self-discoveries.
I love that. And that's the process you work in.
Yes.
Okay. So there is no timeline. Everybody has their own timeline mm-hmm. in terms of how they respond, how they grow, and how they change.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you? Because you did meet the love of your life.
I did. Yeah. And I met him.
Yep.
I met him when I was dating. So here's another thing about this whole scenario is that when we've been in these narcissistic relationships, there's an energetic addiction to drama, because you can't be with a narcissist without drama, at least drama, if not trauma. And so I was one of those who was addicted to the drama. So when I met a nice guy, he seemed boring to me.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So the very less than a handful of nice guys that I attracted, I found something wrong with them. I wasn't attracted to them. I put them in the friend zone, and I kept going after the bad boy type of, you know, like my ex. Well, when I started on my healing journey, so I met my husband now. I met him in 2013, but we didn't actually start dating until 2015. And that's because I was still going through my stuff, right? And we had remained in contact on social media and things like that. And then come 2015, I had gone through one year of personal growth. So that's when we started to get date, and I moved in July of that year, like 7 months later. What I noticed was in the beginning of the relationship, we had, I wouldn't even say it was an argument, it was a disagreement, but I remember sitting on the couch and thinking, this is how I used to feel when I was married. And I had had enough coaching at that time to say, wait a minute, Denise, this is not about him. This is about you. What do you need to do to shift out of this so that you can make this, you know, better, that you feel better, right? And so that's what I did. I focused on me. I went through my steps of what I know to do and shifted that. So we attract who we are, not what we want. So that's what was happening before. And now so that was 2015. So now, yes, we got married last year. Not last year now. It's already, because we're in the new year.
My, how time flies.
Exactly.
Pandemics.
2020, we got married in June on a gorgeous North Carolina beach, surrounded by 100 friends and family. And it was my dream wedding, again, that I manifested, everything inside of that. And I'm, for the first time in my life, in an amazing, healthy, fun relationship.
First of all, the pictures are gorgeous. I saw them on your website. So what you both looked like in the beach. But you said something a minute ago when you were talking, and I want to focus on that. You said, we attract who we are, not what we want. I assume that's when we're not in line. We're not aligned.
Correct. So that's actually a quote, as far as I know, that's from Jack Canfield.
Oh,
he said that.
For the soul.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what he means by that is, okay, so for example, I'll use me as an example. So I come from an emotionally abusive family, like growing up, right? Mm-hmm. My parents were emotionally abusive to each other. There was a lot of yelling and screaming and all of that. Well, now I've created a story. As a child, I created a story in my head that that's what a relationship looks like, right? Mom cries, dad yells, right? Yeah. See where I'm going with this?
Yes, of course, it all goes back.
Right. Then I get into adulthood and I attract who I am. Well, who I am is either the position of mom's energy or dad's energy, because that's the relationship that I grew up seeing. So then I attract, if, for example, if I'm like my mom, I'm going to attract somebody like my dad, or vice versa. And that's what it means. We attract who we are, not what we want, because from the unconscious mind, the subconscious mind is that story that's running. And we know that that's 95% of what runs the show for us. From our conscious mind is when we say, I want somebody who's X, Y, and Z, respects me, treats me well, all of that, right? So that's where that, what that quote means. We attract who we are, not what we want.
That's really good to know, because a lot of times people say, why do I keep attracting these losers? Why do I keep attracting the same kind of person? They ask themselves, and the answer is, well, because that's what you know. That's what you kind of look for. That's where you put yourself.
Unconsciously, yes.
Unconsciously.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, nobody sets out and says, oh, I want a crappy guy to treat me like crap. I want a crappy woman to manipulate me and control me. I want to be abused. Nobody sets out for those types of relationships, right? And we all state what we want, and then we attract the opposite of that. And yeah, it is confusing, but not anymore.
Not anymore, now that we have you on board as the transformational love coach. So I want to focus just a second on other relationships, starting on the relationship. So you've had the courage and the trust in yourself, and you've chosen yourself to say, I want something better, and you remove yourself from the current relationship, the current marriage. Now you have some free time on your hands. So if you are a relationship-oriented person like you, you're going to go out again. And there's many ways you can do that. Why should we wait a little bit before we start dating again when we come from a very difficult former relationship?
Well, that's such a great question. And the first thing that came to my mind, Judith, was what I was stating before, that when I moved here to North Carolina, I just went out and started dating again. And number one, I was attracting the same type of person as my ex. Number two, all of the things that I described about how I felt about myself, low self-esteem, low self-respect, low self-love, and going out there and numbing myself with alcohol and men and choosing these men and all of that. So there, and that's what I say all the time, there must be a healing process between the last relationship and the next relationship. The middle piece is crucial to what you're going to attract in the next relationship. Because if you don't go through the healing part, then you're going to life is just going to show up in patterns, because that's what you need to give yourself attention to, right? So that's why there needs to be that time to sit back and start choosing yourself as a priority. Get to know yourself again. Like, really get to know yourself and love yourself. Forgive yourself for the mistakes that you've made. And forgive yourself for the past. Yeah. And learn to trust again. Because if you've been in a relationship where somebody was cheating on you and giving you STDs and yelling and screaming and lying to you and all of that, of course you're going to walk out of that relationship not trusting. And a lot of women tell me, I don't trust myself because I've screwed up so many times that I'm afraid to date because I'm afraid I'm going to attract the same scenario as the last one. So there's a lack of trust there. So there's just these four key components that need to be healed. Remember, there's nothing broken with you. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing damaged about you. It's just a wound that needs to be healed. And that's the process.
So how can people whose comfort lies in getting another relationship immediately, their identity lies in being a partner with somebody, because isn't that the addiction almost?
Yes.
Or the medicine. Okay, I realized I was in a bad relationship. I got out of it. I'm really happy about that. But I really need somebody. What do we do in the meantime? I mean, yes, get a coach. Yes, call you. But you're not with them every second of the day. How do they fill that void temporarily?
Well, the first thing I would say is, what is that void? What is that story that's running inside of your head that you feel that you need, that's a big word, need somebody in your life constantly, and give, help her or him work through that so they get to that aha moment, like, that's why. Okay, so now that we've identified that and we know that's why you feel like you need somebody, then the next question is do you really need somebody? And most likely they're going to say, no, I don't. It's time for me to need me and focus on me because I'm the priority. I'm the one who's important here. And how else am I going to fix this if I don't go inside and heal me? And that's going to take time to be alone. And also, if they're uncomfortable being alone, that's really good because it's taking ourselves outside of our comfort zone to face the stuff that we've been ignoring or pushing under the rug or didn't even know was there in order to move on in life and actually live a life that we are excited to wake up to in the morning.
I'm really happy that you said that. I think that was extremely important to be uncomfortable, which is good because in order to correct things about ourselves, a level of discomfort you have to go through it until you can get to the more balanced place that you need to because it's foreign.
Right.
And anything foreign is uncomfortable, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so good. I'm glad we addressed that because I see so often, Denise, when people come here to file for divorce and to mediate, California is a no-fault divorce state, so no, you don't have to put this on paper, you know, what happened. I do know if I go into a mediation, what happened becomes the backdrop to how they're talking to one another and how they're negotiating. Mm-hmm. And so you're listening to all of this, and then all of a sudden, depending on how long the divorce takes, because, you know, people do have control to drag it out, people start dating in the meantime. You know, and then I'm listening to, oh, yeah, I just met a new guy, blah, blah, blah. And my whole focus has always been not on this transformational period that you need, but in my line of work, it's about the kids. I always focused on, wait a minute. The kids need time to reevaluate and readjust, and you can't be bringing new people into your life because your kids need to readjust to two households and whatever this dynamic is. How did your daughter react? Because your daughter was with you, wasn't she? Or was she off in college somewhere?
No, she was with me. So she was a little bit older. Of course, being older, I thought it was okay to bring I didn't bring all of my dates around, but I remember one or two, and thinking that was okay. But she was old enough to express to me, like, Mom, what are you doing? Like, you know, I don't want to meet anybody. So, but for the younger ones, it's really important to focus on the new life, like you were saying, like two homes, splitting holidays, summers, whatever. The children have to acclimate to this new schedule, this new way of living. It's so strange for them. God, I empathize with kids so much because as a child, you feel like your whole world has just been ripped apart. You know, even on the best case scenario, even two people who are not fighting and just saying, I've moved on, I've grown out of it, and let's just, you know, it's still heartbreaking for the child. So the first thing I would say is do not bring any dates, any people around the child, because that's another heartbreak on top of the heartbreak that they're still healing from. To see Mom or the different man that in the child's view is replacing Dad and vice versa for Dad to be with another woman, it looks like Mom's being replaced, and that's heart-wrenching for the child. So it's a process for the child, and I would definitely say for children to get therapy, counseling, something for the child to be able to express themselves and write out their feelings and all of that of what they're going through, because that's a huge transformation for them. I would say don't bring the kids around, or don't bring anybody around the kids for
Remember Jerry Maguire, the movie, Renee Zellweger and Tom Cruise, and that cute little boy was her little boy. The character was so adorable, but her whole thing was, you are not meeting my son. until I know that you are committed.
Right.
You know, so just be like Renee Zellweger and Jerry Maguire. And, you know, the hardest thing about that, I think, just from doing this for 10 years in the divorce business is, all right, you are hurting. You know, you're hurting from whatever happened in the marriage. Maybe you're the one that didn't even want to get the divorce. Mm-hmm. So everybody's hurting and you want to fill that void. You want to get rid of that hurt. You want to mask it. And, mm-hmm. and so being in another relationship will take your focus away from the hurt in the marriage. And, you know, I think it's really hard for parents. I do have to bow to parents. So much going on in your lives when you're getting divorced and you have kids, and making decisions that are right for everybody, my God, you couldn't have more on your plate. But if you can, know that your kids have no control, they are powerless, they're depending on you to explain what's going on, make them feel safe, make them feel loved, mm-hmm. Make them feel stable. Mm-hmm. And introducing another person doesn't do that.
It's the opposite of it.
It's the complete opposite. Let's finish this with what you have defined as a bad relationship. How does somebody recognize when they're in a bad relationship? I have all of these different examples. Do you want to start and I'll fill in the gaps if we missed a couple?
Well, the biggest thing that to identify if you're in a bad relationship is when you're crying more than you're laughing, where you're debating, like, what is this worth it? Is this going to go any further? I remember thinking of divorce long before I actually did it or actually even left. So, how do you feel that this is what I would say is how do you feel in this relationship? Are you joyous? Is there ease? Do you feel have fun? Do you laugh? Or are you miserable? Are you thinking about leaving? Are you creating an exit plan? Like, that's way out those in which one, like my relationship now, obviously I don't think about exiting. Now, like we're so in love and I have such an amazing life and it gets better and better every day. But when I was in the 22-year relationship, that's what I went through. It was a lot of crying, a lot of feeling alone and miserable, creating an exit story inside of my head. One day, what do I need to do? What's the first step I need to take? And all of that. So those are the biggest things that I would say to describe bad relationship versus a healthy relationship.
And so for people who say, you know what, that's just me. It's really not that bad. I'm just blowing things out of proportion, right? Isn't that what we can tend to say in our heads? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because is it because we just don't know what to do? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's easy to say, well, just leave. Okay, well, just leaving has a lot of components to it.
Right.
And the first thing is trusting yourself, mm-hmm. and choosing yourself. Mm-hmm. Go back to what we said at the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're saying, if you're experiencing the things, Denise, that you just described, pay attention. It's mm-hmm. not a healthy relationship. Forget about your religion. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that, everybody. I mean, religion is important to people, and I don't mean to do that. But unfortunately, we make bad decisions, mm-hmm. and we have to have the opportunity to correct the decisions, regardless of the religion. And so I'm going to say one thing about people that are in different cultures, different religions, that staying together is it, the end all and be all. Here's how I have found people have mitigated around that. When you're in a religion that absolutely says, if you get divorced, you cannot be a member of the church, and being a member of the church is very important to you, you get a lot of strength from that. So to honor that, somehow this was presented to me. I didn't think about this. I just learned this from dealing with different people in different religions. Getting legally separated was their get out of jail free card. Legal separation is different than divorce.
It is dividing the assets and debts. It is all of that paper stuff, that financial stuff. And you may not live together. You cannot get remarried if you're legally separated, at least in the state of California. I'm kind of that way in the whole country. But that's how people with specific religious rules about divorce seem to and these are generally people in longer term relationships, and who cared if they got married? They had their kids, they lived their lives, and they didn't care if they got remarried. Mm-hmm. So I'm just offering that as a suggestion, because living in a toxic relationship, and I'm going to give you the last word on this, is horrifying, unhealthy. Take it away from there, Denise.
Nobody deserves to be in a relationship like that. Nobody deserves that. It is horrible. It's beyond what, and it gets worse and worse. It never gets better. The apologies are empty apologies. The words are just words. It will get worse, unfortunately. And it could leak into domestic violence, a domestic violence relationship I say, find somebody that you trust, that you can confide in, get mentorship, get help, get out. Even if that means, going to a shelter, there's nothing wrong with going to a shelter. There's nothing to be ashamed of. I debated going to a shelter one or two times, and the shame that I felt if I had done it, what would people think and what would my family think? And oh my gosh, that it stopped me from going to a shelter versus and staying in the relationship, which got worse and worse. So I would say, do that. Find somebody that you can trust, that you can confide in, whether that's a professional or somebody in your family or a friend, and get sound advice. And what I mean by sound advice is advice that makes sense and that lands with you. If it doesn't land with you, if it feels like that's too risky or whatever, go with your gut, go with your instinct and what it's telling you, because your body is always communicating with you and your body's always right. So go with what feels good, not what doesn't feel good. Like, not uncomfortable. I'm saying not feel good, to where it's like, you want to almost throw up. Yeah.
So much. Denise, thank you. I mean, you've taught us so much today. You also are an author. Please share with us the books and how we can get them.
So the first book that I did was The Energy of Happiness. That was a chapter that I wrote in that book. It's available on Amazon.
Wait a minute. The Energy of Happiness is a collection of authors?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The second one that I did was A New Day Dawns, Breaking Up with Abuse, and available on Amazon. That was also a collection of authors. And that one took me to international best-selling author, which was fun.
Oh, and congratulations on that.
Yeah, that was fun. And then the Empower the Woman Within, which is just me as the author. I wrote that in 2018. It was published, I think, 2018. Also available on Amazon. And I tell my story in that book. And there's lots more books
to come,
ready to be birthed. But those are the three that are available, all on Amazon.
And I'll put them in show notes as well. I'll make sure to do that.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
you. This was really, really a great conversation. I enjoyed this tremendously.
Awesome. I did too. Your energy is so calm and it lands so well. It really does. Like, I feel so relaxed and...
Thank you. You should ask my cats. If you ever come to my house, you should ask my cats what I'm like at home. This is my time that I can be calm in my own office. Thank you for
right.
that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Denise, how can people get in touch with you? What's your website?
It's still being rebuilt, but they can find me at True Love After Toxic Love. I'm also on all social media platforms under Life After Narcissism. Life After Narcissism. So they can also find me on Facebook, on my personal page, under my name, Denise Kavaluskas. We'll have to get the spelling for that.
Well, it'll be in the show notes without a doubt on all the advertising.
And then I have a group within Facebook and then a Facebook page. And then I'm on Instagram under Life After Narcissism. I think it's _111. I don't know. I can send you the link. And then my email is lifeafternarcabuse399@gmail.com.
Lifeafternarcabuse311?
399.
Sorry about that. 399 at Gmail. Uh-huh. Oops. I hope people call you. This has been completely informative, and thank you so much for your time, for your story, for your vulnerability. Thank you for all of that. And thank you for the work that you can do with all of us.
Yeah, I love doing this. It literally is my passion to help as many people as possible to heal from these types of relationships and know that they can create an amazing relationship that's fun and exciting and have their travel partner and have their life partner and live, you know, it's up to us to write the end of the story, right?
Exactly. And even if we didn't find somebody like that, at least we will craft the life that we want, full of love and light and happiness.
Yes.
Because we will have friends. We will create the environment that we want with the people that appreciate us. So This is great. Denise, thank you so much.
Thank
all of you for listening. Please, you can always reach me through my email, judith@theamicabledivorceexpert.com, judith@theamicabledivorceexpert.com, and subscribe, share this with your friends. We have phenomenal guests all the time. And as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.